You know, it's interesting. I mean, I went from going to bed at 6 a.m. now to getting up at, you know, 7, yeah. 8, you know, and the clock has been turned on its, yeah, turned on its head. But it's really, yes. I'm enjoying it.
It's crazy, but it's weird from a corporate standpoint because we're still using visual space, so everything still has to be in paper.
Well,
and
these
the books are crazy big. Like it's like, what the fuck is this at, you know, 2014, and you got a book that's, you know, just
well,
so
you
know
what,
visual space.
You know, the libraries actually, most everything is now Westlake. Is it Westlake? I'm sorry. It's mostly NexisLexis, or
yeah.
There's another one, Westlaw. So yeah. You would go into a law firm, and you wouldn't see the libraries anymore. If anybody has the actual, you know, books, the actual, you know, they're so expensive. They're so expensive to maintain. And I think,
yeah.
you know, lawyers got to go plant trees. They cut down so, we use so much paper in the legal field.
It's crazy. Well, they ask people to fax in, you know, to meet compliance regulations. They have to fax shit in. Instead of a scan document, it has to be faxed. That's so left brain, so far behind. But that's, you know, to see the use of the technology, it still goes back to paper.
Oh, yes.
Still
Absolutely.
Goes back to paper, which is so far, it's, you know.
Well,
it's an art
you know,
form. It's an art form.
I think it's because there are so many people in the digital spectrum that are so creative and are able to undermine the integrity of paper. You know, once you put it into that spectrum, it's so easy to use Photoshop. Like, you know, when you see those before and after photos of like Kim Kardashian or any actor or actress out there, when they touch them up for their posters and everything, I think it leaves what are supposed to be contracts, you know, open to, you know, manipulation or being stolen and things like that. And I think that's why they like paper still.
Yeah, but that's...
I know.
that's, you know, if you look at trying to go forward or whatever they're trying to do in that landscape, and they still have to rely on something visual that you can touch and smell and then have so much of it, it's really... It's crazy. I mean, it's interesting to play in it, but it, you know, sometimes you look at it and you're saying, this is crazy. I mean, that you can look at digital documents and you can see scanned, but everything is back to a piece of paper. Just think about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe at one, well, you know, I mean, somebody could type it up and not print it out. So it does start out in the digital, and maybe it's the idea that they have to print it out. You know, because the laws around electronic signature, just hackers and how the government and everybody else is snake and everything that we send around. So, maybe they like paper and plus you get, there's something very significant about the signature. You writing on the page is very significant. You are money. You're like walking assets producing the stuff that makes the world go around. So your signature is esoterically significant, and it doesn't, and it's not as fun with a mouse and a, you know, screen. So I think there's some romance around it, but I think there's something necessary about paper still. But I hear what you're saying. What field are you in, Bert?
Finance.
What kind of finance?
Personal and corporate.
And so what side are you on? Are you the loaner? Are you on the loan side, or do you...
Investments. Wealth management, investments.
Wow. That's... Man, so you see what...
But I'm a digital janitor. I'm just a digital janitor.
Well...
So you just watch the digits and comb it and massage it and tie it up.
See, that's right. You hear all those things that you can do in the digital spectrum. There you go. You know,
that's all it is, though. That's illusion, though. That's all it is, though.
Well, the
that's
illusion.
All it is. It's just transferred from one screen to another, and a lot of transactions go on with paper.
Yeah.
But in the end, no one sees it. Just the digits. That's why it's a, you know, like call me. I'm a digital janitor, basically.
And so do you like it?
It's fun. I mean, it's just fun to play. It's just playing. That's all.
So, market then. What a bunch of shit.
You know. Hello?
What is this? Hi, are you there?
Yes.
So tell us about the market. What's going on with the market then?
See, okay, I'm going to give you my view of it, the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. The market is a personal, that's just something to give someone to talk about. I mean, if you think about it, no one really knows. Everyone's tuning in, listening to someone else talk, and they get an opinion. It's put in a piece of paper, or it's put in the wave, the digital landscape, or someone's speaking, or someone's reading, and it's just an opinion. That's all. I mean, that's all it is. It's just something to give someone to talk about. I mean, and there's a lot of play behind that. But really, most people don't know, to be honest with you. You just base, oh, a lot of people basing on what they've read in a book, which, you know, or like a lot of guys are trained in PhDs to scan things and like that. But a lot of that, they're school trained. But the way the market is now after 2008, no one knows. They're just, everyone's trying to spin their own way based on what someone else did 10 years ago. I mean, it's just new. So I really can't say, because I don't pay attention to it. I'm just a janitor. I just deal with what I'm dealing with. I really won't go into specifics, but it's all an opinion. I mean, if you look at the market, I mean, just what market are you familiar with, for example? Stock market?
Yeah, stock or the commodities or... You know,
okay,
currency markets, but they're on, yeah.
No, my view on that is the stock market is just like Las Vegas. It's Las Vegas. It's just gets, it's a way to get people to focus on things because there's a lot of hype. You know, somebody says market and you automatically think. I mean, it's a game. I mean, you can do your investigation on a company, whatever market you see new, and research it and then look at their stock. And if it's low, right, you buy in. With the hope that it'll grow, but, I mean, you got to spend a lot. I mean, if that's your vibe. So it's like Las Vegas. Wall Street is like Las Vegas, who's talking about stock market. But there's a lot of other markets behind it, a lot of people not aware of. Like the secondary market where loans are sold. Are you aware of that market? Are you aware of the secondary market?
Yeah, right. Yes, absolutely. People, well, the banks that fund those, your signature on loan documents, make that into a secured little, item of value. I mean, that's what the whole 2008 crash was about. Packaging, mortgages.
It all disappeared.
Yeah.
I worked in that market. I worked directly in that market. I used to. I don't work anymore, but that. So it's all a game. That's what I mean. It's just like Las Vegas, but it's a different, little more sophistication applied to it. That's all.
I just think, you know, and what a circus it is, too. I mean, that CNBC can sit there and lie. I mean, and just find some angle to talk about some stupid stock when we have 1720 gazillion in debt and stuff like that, and still talk about people to put their money into the market. It's fascinating manipulation, really. Because
you look at it,
Go ahead.
It's just a art form. I mean, or a archetypal art form that's digitized now. I mean, it won't go away, but there's a third and a fourth market. The secondary market disappeared. So there's another market, which I can't really go into, that is playing as well.
And what does it deal with?
Debt. That's all. The whole market, the real market, that most people are, that's why Ion says it's debt. Money is debt. So all the markets are debt, and now because the interest rates are so low, no one's earning interest, and interest is where everybody earns all their money. Also,
exactly.
But they're still playing, but it's crazy to look at it now. I'm exposed to that in an indirect way, and to look at it, to how they're modeling those securities, it's crazy. I don't even want to know about it. I don't even want to know
about Burp.
It. Yeah.
I think we got some Bob knowledge here in this context. What the market is propping up the private printing press identity.
Yes.
So the Western world is based on individual ownership of your space and your objects. So that now, so people used to get a lot of money 100 years ago to buy a space and accumulate objects. And it was theirs, and the government and the police supported that, the right of property. So as you get into electric software communism in the last 60 years, now what do people do? They share this discount of space chip technology where everything is available, and probably most of it you don't have to pay for. So you're not buying objects anymore. You're buying a process. But the Western world has the alphabetic meme, the printing press meme, just like Asia's has their group tribal meme. And so the reason people still go to Wall Street and buy and sell things is they're keeping that the meme of individual ownership that is increasingly not applicable to the way people actually live. We live in a shared world of information that we dance with every day, and there's no ownership of it. You might bookmark a couple of sites, but the thing is, this is a meme. This is a part of the Android meme. So this is the LaRouche quadrant, visual space, and it's that meme that people are acting out. And since they're so unaware and so unnecessary, you might as well say the machine, the machinic, the Android meme, is replaying the visual space meme for other machines that rely on it, like books and newspapers and banks. So that's where you understand how the different memes are talking to each other. They're after images. There isn't even an ownership. What does the head of Goldman Sachs get? Nothing. He just shows up and goes through the rigmarole again and tries to make his cable go faster and closer to the New Jersey headquarters so that he can claim to be a private individual and go to a private seat in the opera and go to this or that or a good seat at a baseball game, all enhancing the prestige of an individual acquisition of old-fashioned objects. See? So that's what's keeping the market going. The alphabet's keeping it going. The meme, the afterimage, because the way people live, there's no private identity possible anymore. And so that ran out its course in 2008.
Yes.
So basically, the Western world died, and the tribal world is powerless to be born because we're not tribal either. And then that Ian shows up to offer an articulate alternative.
Yeah.
Well, if
don't you guys get that? You see what I'm saying? You should understand something about what's going on. A simple explanation. You get that?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, yeah. If it's a replay and it's propping up, but is it necessarily, it's neither good nor bad, it just is. That's what you're just saying.
It just is. You couldn't stop it. The market, the Reagan recovery was a recovery of the broke spiral of visual space, which all the activists and revolutionaries of the 50s, 60s, 70s didn't understand that the Android meme and its after-image memes would take over. So the Chinese are dedicated to their tribal meme while they try to go individual property owners, right? And they're frustrated going in that direction. Just as the West tries to go collective and tribal, they can't do it because they believe in their private names, and you can't be Mr. Rockefeller, and therefore the image of an ownership of Warren Buffett keeps going.
Hey, Bob, you were talking about private space, you being obliterated. Is there something then in the digital spectrum where you get anonymity because you're out there, you don't have to use your name, you don't have to use your own, photo, and you can in a sense be a chameleon?
You can share the software communism with great autonomy and editing power. You're a god in Web 2.0. There's no reference point in any normal identity. Like, your grandfather didn't drive a tractor in the farm or something and checking his email every 2 minutes. And then when he quit a hard day's work, he'd go home and go online and read opinions and all that, or porn or whatever. This is how people spend their leisure time. is to be in the chip body. And it's not a, it's, you don't go shopping. You just find places to experience. It's a whole different kind of using your leisure time.
Right. I was just asking about privacy. I was just asking about the idea that privacy has been obliterated when you can be somebody else online and that's where everybody is.
Yeah, you can't have privacy. And, of course, the privacy mean demands the society be protected. You have to have the world where people can become billionaires and acquire something, the meme of acquiring. So that's why the Patriots Bill will continue regardless of whatever legislation is. What are they saying now? They're saying we're trying to stop the Patriot Bill or do something to it.
Rand Paul is
Someone will keep the meme going of private ownership that has to be protected, and then the society of individuals has to be protected. It's not going to be stopped until something drastic happens in the change of people's mentalities. And it's interesting, every generation, you know, from the beatniks to the hippies to the yippies to the yuppies to the guppies to the whatever, the millennials now, they are more and more discarnate, more and more don't have any private identity, but they have to fit into a private identity role. And it's just getting pretty hard to do now because the management doesn't even have it, have that actual fact going. So you may have the kids, the big problem right now is many American kids are joining the Al-Qaeda. Right?
Because they're fascinated
by the tribal against the visual.
No. A lot of those Americans that are joining are from that country, or from Yemen, or from Somalia, living in the United States.
Yeah, they don't like, they can't, there's no America for them to fit into in any fantasy they have about it. So they try to recover their roots, they can't do it. But there's even WASP kids joining the Al-Qaeda, you know? So they used to join, you know, they went and dug Charlie Parker and took heroin in 1949. That was what the white kid would do. The white kid is always trying to get out of its private meme of identity, and the tribal guy is trying to become private, like the TV show Empire, you know, that about the hip-hop mogul, right? He's trying to be a private identity American archetype in a tribal medium, a tribal environment, and a tribal family, and a tribal culture, and it's just driving him up the wall, you know? He doesn't know how to be it. But he's forced to. That's why blacks are not African Americans. They are industrial people. They've got the white, and no, they've got the visual space, printed press meme in them, no matter what race you have, where you came from biologically.
But don't you? If you took a look at Dallas, it's the very same drama.
You mean Dallas, the TV show?
Yeah. It's
the only drama possible. It's the fate of the wealthy individual whose circumstances made him get lifted out of the daily middle class grind, and now he's floating above it, and he has to manage huge environments, and he has to own or buy it. But the technologies that he would buy are more and more contradicting visual space. So here's Jeff Bezos. He's got nowhere to go but to buy the Washington Post. You know what I mean? By an old medium, just so that he can pretend he's owning and learning something. That's what's pretty interesting about JW. Here's a trillionaire, perhaps one of the richest men in the world and in America, who is willing to throw off all the trappings of visual space and bring in this new world.
Wow.
Think of that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He's created,
and Ian says he has the ability to allow anything happen to him. So he's really not a Westerner. He's not an Easter. He's just a unique, primitive person, you know, like a caveman with the faculties of sophisticated. And then he has ion drops on him, and then that makes him a bit different, but even more so.
Wow.
But he is pretty unique. he's an example of what Paul Shockley channeled in 1976. The Cosmic Warrior said, there are people in the rich zones, the oligarchy level, who are beginning to give up that acquisitive industrial meme archetype. And one of them would be Lawrence Rockefeller, the guy who funded William Irwin Thompson, a lot of the ecology things, saw a lot of the New Age centers. And I asked
He was the UFO guy too.
Yes, he did it right at the turn, at the beginning of the Clinton administration. And I asked the Evergreens, what's motivating him? And they said he's got family guilt. You know, the Rockefellers are involved in the Kennedy assassination. He's trying to assuage family guilt. But because he's a little old-fashioned, he's trying to fit. He's like Westerner going east. He probably isn't going to be able to pull it off because we come in and undermine that whole thing that he's trying to have the world recognize, the old New Age meme. So we'll see what the Rockefeller grandchildren do.
So isn't that a tribe? You know, one thing, the reason why I brought up Dallas was the idea that you were saying in Empire there's tribe versus private space you know, white oligarchs. But there's tribe everywhere when it comes to family
money
and all that.
You can say the white Dallas oligarchs are a tribe, aristocratic tribe. And McClellan used to write about aristocrats.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the point. They're in a larger society where it is an individualist technology that makes everybody be that way, regardless of what sub-tribe they're from. In the end, the blacks are just like the American Chinese or the WASP rich. Everybody has a certain individualist ego.
Right.
And they got their lawyers, and they got all this defense. And you were talking about law earlier. Law is the profession of preserving visual space. That's
certainly
all they do. They must remain fundamentally dedicated to paper. They cannot give up the paper because they are the paper professional.
Well, it's because
they support the private, the paper world.
We're carrying on from Moses. He brought down plates. You mean he brought down tablets?
They're carrying on from me. Bob started it when I gave the fucking tablets to Moses instead of visual space. That was the beginning. I started it. And I'm here to wrap it up and put it away.
Somebody had to do it.
Yeah. I thought I knew what I was doing. I'm scrambling to correct the fucking defects, and I probably pulled off. I mean, I evoked non-physical to help me. That was a pretty good move that nobody foresaw. But, okay, so it's really a great way that the Android meme is after images of cultures.
Yes.
Not the cultures. Nobody lives in that culture. You can't live in this virtual society as a chemical body culture anymore. But everybody props it up. The economy is based on tourism, which props it up just for people to travel around and pretend they're going to some past. And the economy itself is digital and ridiculously nothing. And so Bert is sitting there as a visually space-conditioned man who looks black but is not. He's got multiple bodies. And on the chemical body level, he is supporting private space. That's what he does. He's a janitor for visual space.
Digital janitor.
And if you actually think about it, you can't go think beyond that. You can't say, well, how do we change this? How do we do this? How do we get out of the sense of chaos and absurdity? It can't be done. You're a robot for your meme, and that's why we say people don't run the show. The Android meme does, and the memes within the Android meme are running the realities. And so Bert knows he doesn't want to think about it or talk about it, and that's because there's nobody knows how to explain it.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, very true.
So you get the top perspective right here on Saturday night. This is the most advanced. Intelligence agencies kind of know it, but they represent visual space. They're not going to emphasize it. They're going to hope that there's a reason to keep being visual space, but the society and the technologies undermine all that. Our iCell undermines visually spaced chemical knowledge. You know what I mean? It just destroys it. And you hear, we did it today with ION. It's always going both directions on any topic.
Yes.
It's tactile. It's not a literate book category that was frozen in the 19th century in a book that you can refer to. There's no book reality referred to now. It's a flow. It's even post-flow. Yeah. We're not going anywhere.
A lot of music.
We live entirely by music, McLuhan said. We are vibrating. We're engaging in frequencies. We're in tonalities. Yeah. That's the way people live.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And that becomes synesthesia, where people don't like music, so they live in a kinetic world musically. They take other senses.
Music also draws images into your visual cortex.
Well, it does everything. It's audio tactile is what you want to think about. It's not just ear. It's audio tactile. And it's synesthesia, which means it is not ear, eye, foot, touch, or anything. It's a weird psychedelic mixture. And then that's your diverse experience. Underneath that is centralizing, where you're a god that can manipulate the synesthesia any way you want.
Right.
You never could do that before. Technically, you do that.
It's fucking bad, Bob. That was bad what you just said. That's.
I know. And this
that's
is,
fucking.
See, this is like a fucking Bert. Hey, Bert, going tribal on me.
Yeah.
That's fucking bad.
Quadratini.
If I was a lawyer, I'd say, I'll see you in court, Bert. That wasn't bad. That was fucking good. Then you said, no, sir, that's our fucking tribal language. That's fucking Oakland talk.
Yeah.
Biobonics or whatever, ebonics. But the thing is, what I'm saying, you can't make a better explanation of that than that until Ion shows up. Ion opens the gates to a whole new level. But up before Ion, what I'm saying is the only high knowledge that sophisticated intelligent agencies can arrive at. You can't go past that. That's why Croker's taught in school, 20 years ago. Professors, you can eventually, if you're a professor in media studies, you'll eventually get to this point, and you might get as not as sophisticatedly as I do, but you realize, shit, I'm gonna have my kids, or my students, 20-year-olds, read Croker, which tells me that my genes have left my body and joined with the machine, have left the human species behind. This is what they're fucking reading about. That's what the literature says in their academic courses. 20 years ago. So they haven't had any courses in 20 years, in 10 years. On the TV show Person of Interest, the hero who was Ben on Lost, he says, college is a bacchanalia of over-entitled kids fucking three times a day, something like that. You know what I mean? It's, don't forget, that's college. And that's Hollywood saying what they know their kids are doing. So there's no bother of conceptual education happening. And of course, they can all cheat, digitally swap papers and all that. So the professors, it's like Carolyn says, every profession is fucked. Yeah, every specialist activity, which was in the old days a conspiracy against the layman, they can't even pull off a conspiracy. Everybody's in the same robotic boat. Everybody. Doing meaningless things. And you saw in that movie, Wall Street 3 or Wall Street 2, it brought back
Wall
that
Street
guy.
Wall Street 2, yeah. Money never sleeps, I think, yeah.
Now, remember the character in that? His mentor, Michael Donahue. What's his name?
Michael Douglas.
Douglas.
Yeah. His mentor was this old guy who did really well on Wall Street. And he was making millions in the movie, and he suddenly says one day, Michael, or whatever the character's name is, this is fucking meaningless. It's in and out. It's nothing. It doesn't even mean anything to make $2 billion today. Did you remember him saying that? And he goes and commits suicide. See, that's the other thing. Visual person has to have a reason for things to happen, has to have an efficient, visual, logical, connected way of we're going from there to the future, the visual space continuum. They have to have a reason for where they're going or what they're doing. If they don't, they become despondent, like that successful Wall Street guy who jumped in front of a subway. So you can see examples that the culture shows you in movies, and that the writers don't know it. They don't know how to explain it the way I am, but I can just use any movie or anything that comes along as evidence of the sociological point I'm making.
Right, right, right.
I mean, that's perfect. The guy's sitting there despondent. He's making billions, and he says, it doesn't mean anything anymore. I know that I'm replaceable. See, there's the private person looking for a private special identity. The African guy over there in South Africa, working in some slave situation, at least he's got tribal identity. He doesn't worry about whether he's successful privately. Though that's being threatened, so some of them are trying to become individualistic.
Well, there are hierarchies. There are hierarchies, though, within tribes, though.
Oh, that's
so
common
there
sense.
Are individuals.
Don't cite common sense to me. That's all normal stuff. It's like McLuhan used to say, these idiots who talk about the conspiracy in economics, like LaRouche's conspiracy of economics, that's normal knowledge. Everybody can see what McLuhan called the economic fallacy. What you want to do is see this new hidden factor of media dynamics that no one ever knew before. Only in the 20th century could we know it.
Okay.
And that will prepare you for ION.
I'm sorry, but I just didn't see how it was such a distinction for this African to be outside the private space. But, oh, thank God he's tribal. We're in the tribe. Hello, my God. There's so much pressure to be a tribe.
Well, the terms are
a tribe means the suppression of a tribe means the suppression of the individual.
Well, they just don't have visual space. They don't walk down a street and have a nice big house to go into with a separate car. And they don't have straight-line streets. They've got curvy, ghetto, winding dust roads. You know?
Yeah, but...
They don't have the linear experience.
Their privacy almost is in being out and being shown as being the chief or being the good worker or being something within the tribe where they differentiate themselves, not by
roles.
They have roles,
not jobs. The Westerner has a job, a slot. The African can be anything, and he's got a role.
Well, the tribe calls upon that. I'm saying the tribe versus that.
Well, this tribe. This is what. What's the famous guy there? Man begins with M. He freed
Mandela?
South Africa. Yeah,
Mandela.
Mandela's problem is that, okay, we're a free country. We can have our own visual space now. But he was up against tribal hostilities, and he couldn't get the economy going the way the West had it because there was too much bribery, which the black tribes didn't call bribery, but it was all based on loyalty to your tribe. And whatever tribe got into the bureaucratic position to dish out jobs, that tribe got the jobs. So they end up with a lot of civil war all the time. That's a bit different than the way Americans are. The Americans fight individually. They don't fight for a tribe.
Well, I mean...
You can make vague literate... everybody's a tribe. That's not specific enough. We're looking at the individual clothing of each kind of grouping and what the characteristics and the laws of that media dynamic. That makes you a more perceptive person than just saying, oh, yeah, all humans get together. Mark Stallman used to say this. The common thing is people operate in gangs. It's just one gang against another. You can't operate on that simple paradigm when you're dealing with sophisticated synesthesia of information and scenarios and movies and TVs and YouTubes and newspaper articles. The Baroque spirals of complexity is how you have to talk. You don't talk about, oh, that's all just white people, or that's just black people, or that's just Jews. See, the verbal categories don't work anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking in verbal categories.
No, the words refer to environments which have become memes.
Mm.
In other words, everything that looks human is just a meme. There's actually just a digital matrix, or worse, that's involved. You know, there's no anthropomorphic human chemical body level anymore.
Well, you know,
there's no individualism, there's no tribalism.
Well, it's interesting that people then, from wherever they are, they can just snap on a different a meme or a
different
software
body
for their hardware.
Right. That's all. That's all they have to do.
Yeah. So
that's a new form of ownership, and that's not something you own. You share it and get new stuff every 3 days or 3 months.
Right. Hey, Bob, did you guys – this is off a whole different subject because we were talking about Van Tassel. I'm sorry. Did you ever watch Jack Parsons, JPL, and the guy from OTO? Come on.
No, I've seen Craig Baldwin's movie.
Oh, okay.
That's good. I mean, I've seen a lot of the documentaries on Jack Parsons and forget Craig Baldwin's version.
But that wasn't
but
somebody
what about
that you
it?
I was wondering if you followed them, if you were interested in what, because it was like L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons and
well, that was part of what I looked at in the 50s, you know, because see, the oligarchs, the Secret Council 10, in the end are Western visual space and private identity. They are forced to be a tribe up against the middle class. But they wanted to see what was coming and what technology. They knew the medium was the message. So any new phenomenon was always a syndrome of some hidden ground. So they watched L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons and Crowley and all that stuff.
Yeah, Crowley, yeah.
As well as everything else they watched. They watched everything. Because they were on the sidelines. They represent visual space, and visual space was on the sidelines. The actual visual space ownership of everything had to sit on the sidelines because money became public property under radio conditions in the 30s. That's called the welfare state.
Right.
The warfare welfare. So, you know, the queen is the ultimate oligarchic visual space individual.
You know, what did they glean from being on the, what did that perspective help them to do? And
well, they're waiting for a breakthrough. They're waiting for something that would upset the world that allow them to be, not have to be so hidden. And that happened when the Rockefellers blew the whole thing in the computerized economy in the late 70s, and the economy collapsed in 79, 80, the Volcker era, and then the only people who had visual space were the oligarchy, because they never lent money like the Rockefellers, they only invested money. So the Prince Charles, I introduced him to Lady Di, he gets a trophy wife, and he starts walking around the world for 10 years, bringing in the oligarchic money, and that was the golden years for the Secret Council 10 that I was part of. And for 10 years, they were back in charge of a meme. It was, my own father told me 20 years before that, it's not going to work, Bob. He told me that. You can read it in my diary entries. Look in the entries, late 50s, early 60s. So it didn't, it then collapsed in the early 90s. It was over. So then the Android memes after image takes over. And then that forces certain, oligarchic private space guys to blow up the World Trade Center, just the last vestige of trying to create a meme that creates the reinforcement of visual space based on fear.
Wow. Great. What do you think of the Pope?
Just another visual space dangling guy. You know, he's trying to look hip, and he's altering. I do an interesting conversation with the Kirchhoff in one of my recent recordings about that, because he's consulting with the Vatican. He's a Belgian Catholic with a Canadian probably too. But the he was talking about how radical this new Pope is.
Yes.
And Ian says, and we were over there, Ian says they are reacting to us. He knows that he's got to come up with some better ideas, because on the face of it, nobody's interested in literacy that they represent. You can't have a Catholic Church if you don't have literacy.
Right.
You can't have Christianity. You can have TV evangelists, but that's not Christianity. That's showbiz.
I call him the Bill Clinton of popes. I mean, I feel your pain, you know? Gets down, washes the people's feet. I mean, what he said is revolutionary. I mean, he's really... I mean, as a Jesuit, also coming into the realm of the
work.
Pope,
they're trying to do desperate. They're following the third Jesus. We follow the first and second Jesus, who are still alive. He's following a dead Jesus.
And
not
going to
work. But, you know, Ian was saying 4 years ago the Vatican was bankrupt very badly, and they were meeting and telling the priests, you've got to emphasize on raising as much funds from your flock as possible. We're not going to make it. And so they kicked out whatever that guy's name wasn't around enough to remember it, Benedict or something. And they brought in a guy who's going to literally act out the human scale Christianity meme. But it won't work. It's not important anymore.
Yeah.
But that's how desperate they are. They were bankrupt, so they had to have a pope act the way a pope never acted.
Well, the child molestation didn't help either, right? But it seemed like also it was something to counter the huge.
It doesn't matter about child molestation. Of. Visual space must carry on, and that involves the Queen and the Pope and university life and what else and book culture. That is visual space, and they all have their role of reinforcing it. So there's no way, no scandal can stop the Vatican as long as you have the population wanting to have the meme of visual space.
Well, I'm sure they maybe just wanted to, you know, freshen up a bit whatever that book looks like or whatever they're asking people to, you know, get involved in. And so I think the child molestation must have had something to do with getting rid of Benedict and bringing in Francis. But well, how does it compare to like the to? I just thought he was kind of coming in as a counterbalance to the big push in the media of Islam and how that's all being propped up. Yeah, here it is. There was an we had two intolerant religions, and now one's become so hip and contemporary. Is that visual space at all meaningful when you look at what how Islam is being used in that way?
Yeah, well, Islam is visual space with the ear bias. The West is that's the difference between the Eastern Church, the Russian Orthodox Russian Church, Orthodox Greek Church. They have a more ear basis. That was the split over the filioque. That was the theological doctrine 1,000 years ago. The difference between Constantinople and Rome.
Right.
So you've got the ear visual space of the – they all come from Abraham, right? So you got the ear visual space of the Arabs, and then you've got the eye visual space of the West, and that's the battle, eye versus ear. But they're in a tactile ground for the last 80 years, and now it's figure, so they got to appear tactile. So the Arabs, they become tactile by blowing themselves up. And the Pope becomes tactile by washing the poor people. They're all trying to be the tactile, I feel your pain, or I am your pain, or I will cause pain, tactile extension. That's all they can be. Hmm. And it won't work because it's just like in Bert's business. The very thing that they're buying and selling is an illusion. Because you can't own anything. No
right.
point in owning anything.
Right.
Well, Buffett makes his money, and then he has to get time off to go to watch some YouTubes. That's the only entertainment there is. Or whatever digital, you know, virtual space or second life that he likes to go into. He has to do chemical body stuff so they can get time to engage his chip body. That's what wealth is today, is to have a chip body. So we all do that. So let me just lead to the next point, unless somebody wants to say something about what we're saying, besides Eben and
Bert.
Well, maybe Bert might have something. Bert will just go right away, right on, Bob. Best thing I ever heard. You're fucking perfect. Genius. That's what Bert was saying.
But Bob just gave a description of the merging of the bodies, that was.
And they're more memes now.
Right.
They're after images of the bodies. That's why Ayn says they're obsolete. They've merged. The chip body, he doesn't put a concrete value on it. It's gone into the hexad body. That's the ground. So, you know, we've been anybody? I had some people around. Susanna, anybody want to say anything before we go on to another theme?
Bob, did you ever mention to De Kirchhoff any of Ion's exegesis of the Bible or the three Jesuses or anything like that?
When I visited him in Nice in August last year, I stayed a Friday night at his place. So we spent the evening. I explained to him, he and his girlfriend, partner, about Ion. You know, and they listened, and they were interested. I told a lot about what we did and the RNA drops and all that. And then the next morning, he's in the kitchen, and he goes, "Look, Bob." And he gets my attention. I look over, and he has an automatic garbage can. And the lid pops up. I don't know how the lid popped up. You know what I mean? Maybe he's got some, I don't know, laser thing. So the lid pops up by himself, and he throws the garbage in it from a distance. He says, "Look, Ion. So it registered enough for him to make a joke about it the next day using this technology. He was claiming that Ion was lifting, opening the garbage can. So he had a pretty good sense of humor, and that was funny. And
but you know, never, Christine had a positive comment underneath, you know, the article from you and Carolyn did the exorcism on you with the heart. Her comment was real positive. You know, she was happy.
That's before she heard it. That's before she heard it.
Oh, she had not heard it. Because I thought, considering what's said, I was like, she was pretty positive.
No, it's a little complicated story, but after she heard it, she demanded me to delete it. No public record
Seriously?
Of it.
Seriously? Oh,
seriously.
Okay. I thought she did pretty well considering. I was like, okay, now that explains that.
No, I talked about it in the unrecorded part on Tuesday afternoon. Whoever was listening, they got all the Eliza got all the details.
Hmm.
And Eliza would, if she was here, she'd say, "So what happened, Bob?" Well, I would just say it's at a standoff right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh dear!
Well, that was not very smart of her.
No, it isn't.
That wasn't smart of her to make a comment before she heard what was said.
Right. Well, Kirchhoff, I told the Kirchhoff about it, and he wrote to her and said, "Listen to this; it's important." And he's her mentor, so she just assumed that the Kirchhoff liked it; it must be good.
Oh.
Did he like it? Or did he comment?
I don't know if he's ever heard it. He has not commented on it.
Oh.
I bet he hasn't listened to it.
Right. So that's that. So here's what happened. We've been following Alan Cabal, who wrote an article on Bob Beck and all these people. It's interesting. It happens tonight in late 90s in the New York Press, and I read it and I said, I spoke to one of the editors there, and I said, I like this Alan Cabal. He said a very good thing about McLuhan. So I end up meeting Alan Cabal, and then he eventually interviewed me for the newspaper. But the editor rejected the article because they couldn't figure out what I represented. Like, how do we sell this guy? What is he about? You know, it was too much Quadrophenia. They didn't know what label to stick on me. So the article never got published. So then he shortly after that left New York. And then he returned, started to return last fall, and we wrote his column. So Bert and that, you guys know about his old girlfriend, who he is sort of semi-split from, Daisy, had a junkie son and caused a big problem for Alan Cabal a couple months ago. Remember?
Yeah.
So nobody here has read it, right? Nobody's read the new article.
Not the new one, no.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
So it's called The Curse of Cassandra. And I just finished the Thomas Pynchon book last night, and a few other synchronistic things. So he goes, The Curse of Cassandra, and he says, subtitle, We Are Living Under a Tornado Sky. So he begins the article by, one of my favorite quotes comes from Marshall McLuhan, from his book, The Mediumist Massage. And then he quotes it, There is absolutely no inevitability as long as there is a willingness to contemplate what is happening, unquote. Now, this turns out to be a very intense article. He has an extreme situation happen. So just for the record, I'm going to mute everybody so we get it clear. And then we talk about it after, because it's not that long. Oh, mute everybody.
All participants are now muted.
So he starts off quoting McLuhan. Then he says, That's been a guiding principle of my life since 1967 when I first read the book, The Medium is the Massage. That's when it came out in 67. It's a fundamentally hopeful sentiment. Lately, I found myself doubting it. I'm not a religious man, but I seem to be having a classic crisis of faith. My faith in heuristic techniques and empiricism is increasingly at odds with my growing suspicion that reality is utterly and completely random and at all times totally unpredictable. Life is not a linear narrative. The perception of causality may simply be a tertiary effect of apophenia. Apophenia is seeing patterns in order where there isn't any. In theory, thermodynamic miracles are not only possible, but inevitable. One day in some universe, I will place a kettle of water on the stove to brew some tea, set the burner on high, and the water in the kettle will freeze. I have no doubt whatsoever that this will happen in the fullness of time. Then he says, next paragraph, Daisy's son... Now, her son caused a big problem for Cabal a few months ago and put a big strain between Daisy and Alan's in their relationship. Daisy's son, he seemed to have gotten better. Daisy helped him through this transition. So, Daisy's son Jonah was found dead by some cops in Rhode Island on Wednesday. He died of a heroin overdose. Daisy's ex-husband called her upon receiving the news, and she called me. Then Alan says, I can say unequivocally that the most heartbreaking sounds I've ever heard came out of my smartphone. to be 922 miles away from her as she endures such incomparable grief is difficult. But it's not about me. She wants to be alone for now with Betsy the cat. She'll gather around the family. Her niece is helping. She's grateful for the 2 months she and her son got to spend together as he detoxed the methadone. That's a couple months ago. They hadn't seen each other in 12 years. She nursed him through it and got to see the light come back into his eyes. He cleaned up well enough that she bought him a nifty little minivan and got him set up to travel. He left Gainesville, went back to Rhode Island, copped some smack, and died. Her take on it is that it's like Toto getting away in the opening of The Wizard of Oz. I call that a pretty fucking evolved grief response. We are living under a tornado sky. It's easy to say I'd rather be lucky than smart. It's a little trickier to say I'd rather be crazy than right. So I just unmuted.
All participants are now unmuted.
We've been following this story since last fall. Well, we didn't start. He started his columns last fall. He returned to writing after, you know, many years of not doing it. Occasional article here and there in other places. So here he is. We follow him reviewing his life as he gets ready to leave America and go to Copenhagen or someplace. He's totally alienated. So we're sending him the recordings of our conversations about him and seeing what it'll do. Well, we just had a very dramatic peak this week on the whole experience. So any comments on that? And he begins talking about McLuhan.
Yeah, but he saw this coming with Daisy. Remember, like, 2 articles ago, he said he's going to, you know, find the boy was going to be dead somewhere. He wasn't going to get through this. There's no way to help him. He was already saying that before this even happened.
Right. He said that he had to let her live in her delusion of trying to help the kid. And now, that's what he means at the end here. It is easy to say, I'd rather be lucky than smart. See, he doesn't want to rub it in his column that he was smart and predicted it. But it's a little tricky to say, I'd rather be crazy than right. He doesn't want to say he's crazy. But he's right. He was right, like you said, Kim. It's a little tricky to say, I'd rather be crazy than right. So he wishes he wasn't right, and he wasn't smart. But it's easy to say, I'd rather be lucky. In other words, he's saying, he's doing a Bob. He says, I'm the only one who knows what's going on. I'm fucking a genius. I know what's going to happen to our culture. Bob's got nothing on me, but it's no fun because Bob got all slack and I got people dying around me.
And he seems like a collision course every single week. There's a new collision he's run into.
Yeah. When I showed up, everything fucking went south and north and west and east and all and inner when Bob started to laser beam him.
Wow. Yes. I mean, that article seems like he's taking a little, I think he's read something or listened to something, or I think he's taking something from
there's slight Bob knowledge implied in there, slightly.
Yeah.
Opens
like
up
when
on the
he says, right, and then he says 922 miles away from her.
Yeah.
He's starting to get superstitious about 22, and he says, it's not about me. That's the ionic response. She wants to be alone for now. You know, he's putting all this, you know, very painful experience of it, listening to her grieve over the smartphone. But who says, well, it's not about me? You don't say that usually.
It's
most
weird
people
that
run
Ion...
in to help.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the resources, and he's crippled, you know, so he can't really move down there. What?
Ion said that you create DNA by not
grieving dead people. He probably knew I was going to read this, and he made that this week's definition resonate with the larger themes of the show.
Hmm.
You'll have a different definition in a couple of weeks. And you have to realize Ion can do that. You know, interpret that. He said that definition because he knew we would be talking about this. Because it is a kind of denouement of the whole Alan Cabal story here. It's the worst. It's a tragic ending for all of them.
Yeah.
So it's easy to say, but he's saying I'd rather be lucky than smart. But it's too easy to be lucky. And it's a little trickier to say I'd rather be crazy than right. He's actually, ionically, can't go to the normal escape valve. Mm-hmm. He's stuck with knowing too much that he was smart, that he was right. It's not comfortable to be that way.
Yeah, that last line is very ionic.
What was the first part?
That last line is very ionic.
Right. So I thought it was incredible reading this yesterday. I said, well, this is appropriate. We've had some big I make a pretty good manifesto in the second last Roxy video. It's the one, well, it's actually reverse order on the Facebook page now. But there's two of them she did last couple of days. And the one that's not about Finnegan's Wake is the one I'm talking about. And so it was pretty dramatic what we said this week, and then this happened to him.
And yet he sounds pretty detached, too.
Yeah, he is. Well, that's why he thinks he's worth reading. He thinks he's a wise person. He thinks he's one of the few people who knows what's going on. He thinks his scenario should be understood. That's why he's writing again. He's basically being a Jeremiah saying, you're all fucked. This America, this country's gone. And he's leaving. Well, he said he was. Who knows what this will do for him. His subtitle, see, the curse of Cassandra. Cassandra predicted bad things, right? So he's saying, I'm a Cassandra, because what it was, Cassandra was that she predicted bad things and nobody listened to her. So Daisy didn't listen to him.
Right.
Yeah, but she's a mom. Yeah.
Right.
She's a
but
she
says, we are living under a tornado sky, and it shows a big monster tornado coming towards you.
Well, and that is saying that the thinking is that you have no control of things around you. You're the victim of circumstances.
He's still the victim. He's not getting the message. There's no tornado sky here in Dobbstown.
Not here either.
Do I hear a second? Someone going to second that? Well, Kim just seconded that theme.
Yep.
But is he really mean himself, or he's saying the generic you or we, and not including
himself?
Well,
he means America, and he knows if he stays here, he's screwed, so he's leaving.
Right.
He's a journalist. He's putting on the collective we. We are living, but personally I'm not. A private person, I'm not going to be here. I'm getting out of here. But I better get out of here pretty quickly because everybody's being killed in the final weeks. I mean, his girlfriend, she's ruined now emotionally. Mm-hmm. And the son is gone. You know, he's got this emotional interface with Daisy that he has to deal with now. That's way more intense.
And you know what?
He said there's absolutely... What?
Their relationship will never be the same. It'll always have this, like, dark cloud over it. It'll just not be the same.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the battle was over him and the son. Daisy had to take sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the quote he has from McLuhan is, there's absolutely no inevitability as long as there is a willingness to contemplate what is happening. Not think about what is happening, to contemplate. And he's saying he can do that, but the people around him didn't do it.
But yet he feels he has to get away. Because he can't.
Well, he's trying to get away. He's got a lot of old little man concepts about it, and she's drawing him back in. Like he said, she wants to be alone for now with Betsy the cat. She'll gather around the family her niece is helping. So eventually she might want to be in touch with him.
That sounds like he wants her, wants to be in touch with her eventually.
Right. So she cleaned up the son. He looked pretty good, bought him a minivan, and then sent him up to drive up north so the guy buys some heroin and dies. After his, so you can see he was on a suicidal trip. He wanted to have one last relationship with his mother and then kill himself.
Yeah.